Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the January 22nd, 2018 edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, taking you through this hour-plus journey looking at the world of MMA and pro wrestling and how they are intertwined with each other. But of course, I am never alone on this journey. Not only do I have you listeners, but I got a couple of co-hosts with me. I got my MMA Torch tag team partner, Zach Hadorn, with me. Zach, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Robert. Glad to be here and a lot to digest.
And of course, we have unquestionably the happiest man to ever be on a podcast, Sean Ennis, on today. How's it going, Sean?
The birds are singing, the sun is shining, it's 7 o'clock at night, and I'm walking on air, baby.
So the goal for the rest of us during this podcast is to keep the energy and vibe of Sean and spread it through the rest of us. If we do that, we'll know we'll have had a good show. Now, if you want to get in on that vibe, you could simply just give us a call. 515-605-9345. Once you dial that number, if you want to get on, press 1 on your keypad. Let me know to bring you on. I will get you on. If you don't want to call, maybe you're in the office and you can't do so, but you're listening along, you want to send an email, that's fine too. I monitor the inbox throughout the show. The email address is mmalivecast@gmail.com. That is mmalivecast@gmail.com. You can also send us a tweet. I monitor the Twitter account as well throughout the show. It's very simple, @MMAtorch. Send something there during the show. And I'll answer the question, and I don't want to get some ideas from you guys. Maybe we should get a hashtag going for this show. You know, for Wade Cowler's podcast, he's got a WKPW hashtag going. I don't know what kind of good acronym we can get for MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. It might be a little long, but if you guys think of something, send something my way. All right,
we'll do it.
Yeah, think of something. I want to get something going that's creative, but not too, like, you get the United States men's national soccer team. That one, I always think it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles instead of what it's supposed to be. So I want one that's a little simpler for our show.
Agreed. So what you're saying is you don't want to do PWT, FPWF?
No, yeah, I wrote that out the other day, and it didn't work out, so... It's something simpler. We got a lot of creative people, but amongst the three of us and in our audience, somebody can come up with something better than that. All right, guys, let's get into what we had over this past weekend. We had a pay-per-view that on paper was a two-match card, and from a headline perspective, definitely that's what it was. But overall, a decent main card. In the main event, we had Stipe Miocic making heavyweight history by getting his third consecutive title defense coming against Francis Ngannou. He got the unanimous decisions after five rounds, 50-44s across the board. Very hyped fight, a fight that it seemed like somebody would go down very early. Instead, we got a five-round grinded-out fight. This fight may be a little bit controversial online, some people saying it didn't live up to the hype, other people really liking it. What it came down to it is Stipe did not want to trade with Francis Ngannou, which who in the world would ever want to trade with Francis Ngannou? And Stipe showed how good of a mixed martial artist he truly is, using his his game with takedowns and his grappling, and he's really smothered Ngannou and got within his range. He did get tagged a few times. It was amazing. For as little as it seemed like he got hit, his face surely looked like he'd been in a heck of a war after the fact. But the fact remains, Stipe is the champ. Three title defenses in a row, something nobody in that division has ever done amazingly. And yeah, he sits atop of the UFC. So the question is now, where does he go from here? There's a lot of little rumblings about Cormier from the light heavyweight division coming up to fight him. I don't know if that happens. That's something we're going to talk about a little bit later on. But outside of Cain Velasquez, Stipe has faced almost everyone in the division. He beat everybody to get to the top. So there isn't a ton of options left for him as the defending heavyweight champion. I'll start off with you, Sean. First of all, what did you think of the fight? And then what do you see for Stipe going forward?
I really enjoyed the fight. I was impressed by Stipe. You know, Stipe had a good game plan, and that was really what it was going to come down to. You know, we talked last week about the unknowns with Ngannou, about his gas tank especially, and that's really that really kind of showed out in this fight. And coming from a perspective of what Ngannou showed, I think, I'm not going out on a limb here by saying that if he gets his cardio under control, which a guy his size, that's no small feat, but if he gets to where he can go even three rounds without completely gassing out, he's going to be an extremely tough out. I mean, if you look at what he was doing later in the fight, he had no gas whatsoever, but he was throwing punches with his body weight and looked like he could still knock people out if he were to catch him with it. I mean, just the inhuman strength that this guy has, you know, even for the heavyweight division, is just it's unbelievable. So, he is going to be a real handful going forward. You know, he said he learned a lot. He learned more in this fight than he's learned in the 4 years. He's only been doing this 4 years, and he learned more in this fight than he has in the 4 years combined. And excuse me, I have no problem believing that. You know, Ngannou is going to be very, very tough. And, I mean, imagine if Miocic couldn't get him down. You know, who is going to stand and trade with Francis Ngannou throwing those giant punches? You know, it doesn't take very much for him to knock people out. So it's going to be very interesting to see what he does next and see what he does against the top of the division. Cause I don't think they're moving him back down the ladder anytime soon. As for Stipe, it's a tough one. You know, I don't know exactly where they're going to look next. You know, obviously Cain Velasquez is kind of the easy matchup for that. But of course he hasn't fought since what, like 2016 now, I think. So who knows when and if he'll be back. Other than that, I mean, Daniel Cormier, the super fight with Daniel Cormier is a no brainer. If you can line it up, that's two guys that have basically cleaned out the divisions. So I would love to see that. Other than that, you know, I mean, it's not as if you've ever had to have more than two wins in a row to get a heavyweight title shot in the UFC or in any MMA organization. So we'll kind of have to wait and see how it plays out.
Yeah, and it was interesting, all the talk after with Ngannou, people act like his career was over after this fight, when it's like, have you not watched the heavyweight division for the last 10 years? First of all, the guy's only 31, so he's like basically a preteen in the division relatively to how long his guys fight there, and it's a very up-and-down division, so he definitely could get back on track. If I forecast into the deep, deep future, this is a fight I think we could see again. And it would be interesting to see maybe a quite a bit older Stipe that had taken more damage against a Francis Ngannou who had refined his game a lot more. But yeah, I definitely think it's not over for Ngannou. And like you said with Stipe, you just never know what a role is in the heavyweight division. It can happen very quickly. Zach, what do you think of the fight, and what do you think of these guys going forward?
I really enjoyed the fight too. I thought it was entertaining. In a different way than I thought it would be going in, but I thought it was entertaining nonetheless. I thought, you know, Stipe obviously dominant, and I think it was really fun to see him execute kind of the game plan that we knew he'd go in with, but he was able to do it essentially flawlessly. The interesting thing is that he also took some Ngannou heat. I mean, he, like you said, he looked battered, and he didn't even really seemed like he took a lot of punishment. Then you look at him afterwards and you're like, man, this guy withstood quite a bit of damage and still was able to execute that game plan. The part for me that was kind of out of whack was Francis Ngannou had to go into this knowing what Stipe's strategy was going to be. And the fact that he really, from the onset, had no answer for any of the ground game that Stipe threw at him really just makes me wonder what he was doing in his camp. I mean, he was just so ill-prepared to face Stipe on the mat. And like I said, he had to know going in that was going to be a position that he was going to be in. So I think that's a miscalculation on his part. It's something that comes with experience. And I don't think he's done. I think he'll be back. You know, look, he's He's a guy that, you know, is a highlight reel guy. I think the UFC really likes him. I think he didn't do himself any favors losing the way he did on Saturday night. But like you said, the division isn't that deep. I think he'll be back. As far as Stipe's next direction, yeah, Cain Velasquez is an obvious one if he can get his health in order. Outside of that, the Cormier fight intrigues me too. I think a super fight there. Both guys deserve the payday that will come with it. There's no obvious contenders for either of them at the moment. So I think it's at least something to try to look at and figure out if you can get all the stars aligned perfectly. Outside of that, in the heavyweight division, I think it's going to be something that you just look at the rankings and go from there. It's probably the division that's most in order in terms of who gets the next shot. And we'll just have to see how that all shakes out.
Right. And another thing to consider with the heavyweights is with Cain Velasquez specifically, he's been posting a lot lately to social media, kind of hinting that he's at least training and getting back. So maybe he's a little closer than he is further away. Now, like you said, this guy hasn't fought since UFC 200, got pulled out of a fight at UFC 207. But I feel that even though now technically Stipe is the greatest champion of all time in that division, he must go through Cain to fully solidify that legacy as that heavyweight, because I think there's such a mirror image factor in that, you know, they talk a lot, they were talking a lot of, on Saturday about the cardio of Cain Velasquez, the sort of historic cardio that he has in that division. And the only thing you've ever seen comparable to that probably is someone like Stipe. So that's why that is such a juicy matchup. There's just no faith that that'll happen. Even if it gets booked, that just doesn't seem like a fight that's going to make it to fight night. So that's the one I think is the correct fight to make. And it's ironic talking about all this Cormier stuff, because why isn't Cormier a heavyweight? Well, because he's teammates with Cain Velasquez. And so it just seems like maybe the next fight for Stipe is just to fight somebody from that camp, and like whoever's healthy on fight night can just step up and fight Stipe. Let's go on to the co-main event. Speaking of Daniel Cormier, he made me look really stupid for my prediction last week, as he took out Volkan Oezdemir in the second round, TKO to punches, 2 minutes into the round. Volkan had some moments early on in the fight, looked pretty good, looked like he was going to go for that knockout blow. Kind of similar in the two fights, even though this one didn't go the full five rounds, where the younger, you know, the prospect went out there with their strength, where and then the more experienced fighter took over. Daniel Cormier right now is fighting at such an elite level, even going back to the John Jones fight where he got knocked out. You just see what a good mixed martial artist this guy became in such a short amount of time. It's really an amazing thing. Zach, what do you think of the fight overall, and what do you see in the near future for Cormier?
I enjoyed the fight too. It didn't go quite as I thought. I thought Cormier would pull it off, but I really thought that Oezdemir would be able to do more than he did. In the fight itself, the first probably 10, 15 seconds was just Oezdemir just out of his mind in terms of his offense. Like, and I just felt to myself, like, if he can keep that up throughout the round, Cormier is gonna have a problem. But he wasn't able to, and as soon as Cormier got that sense, it was all over. And I think Cormier really did kind of define himself. And like you said before the fight, he said there are levels to this. There are levels to MMA competition. And I think he proved that Oezdemir certainly is not on his level at this point in time. But it was a dominating performance. I thought it was really – it had to feel good for him. It had to feel good for him to walk in, have that kind of performance after everything that happened with him and the loss to John Jones and then getting the belt back. It had to be something where he feels a little vindicated with just how good he is and his place in the division and within UFC history at this point. As far as his future, again, he's another guy who's faced them all and conquered them all. So, if I'm him, I know he's come out and said that he's really not interested in the Stipe fight, but I think if you can get him to relook at that, that's a fight that's going to make him a lot of money. It's a dream kind of matchup. And at this point in his career, You just don't know when those kind of things are going to come at you again. You may want to take advantage of it while you still can. So I think there's going to be some legs to that fight at some point here in the near future. And if I'm Cormier, that's my next move.
And we should know, earlier today he went on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani and kind of hinted that this might be his last year of competition. So I would think then you might want to get that super fight and that one really, really huge payday in before everything shuts down for you. Unlike Stipe, though, I would say that the Alexander Gustafsson fight is still a good enough fight, even though it's a fight that's happened before. Gustafsson still had been on a tear recently, and that was a really good fight the first time in a fight. There would still be an appetite for it, so I don't think he necessarily has to go in that super fight direction, although they just had to find a way to rebuild this division to get a good, solid rank of contenders. It's so weird in the UFC, yet you have divisions like middleweight where there's so many contenders and so many good options, and then you go up to light heavyweight where you really have to figure out who to put in and who to face the champion. Sean, what were your overall impressions of the fight, and what do you see for Cormier in the future?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you guys on this one, and I do need to point out, so since it happens so seldom, that this went pretty much exactly as I expected. But as far as Cormier's future, I think I would do a combination of what you guys are talking about. I would love it if Cormier, if this is indeed his last year of competition, I would love it if he were to end it with a fight against Alexander Gustafsson and then another one with Stipe Miocic at the end of the year. I think that would be awesome. I don't know how likely it is. I mean, obviously, if he were to lose the fight against Gustafsson, maybe that takes a little luster off of the fight with Miocic as well. But we'll see how that goes, and we'll see kind of what's coming here. And as far as Ozdemir, I do want to point out with him as well that he's still also a young dude, kind of similar to Ngannou in that, you know, he was overmatched here. But I really liked what we were seeing out of him at the beginning of the first round. I mean, obviously, the tide turned, you know, relatively early in the fight. And once it got to the ground, you know, the fight was over. But I mean, Ozdemir seemed to have really good timing. He was timing Cormier's movement. He kind of knew where he was ducking into, and he almost caught him with a few of those shots early in that round. But I do think that he's got a really bright future at the top of the division, kind of like Cormier said in his post-fight interview. I think he's one of those guys that that we could see as a perennial top light heavyweight for a while now. So that's kind of what I see for those two guys.
And it's interesting with Ozdemir. I think under other circumstances and the more normal flow of a division, he wouldn't have got a title shot this soon. He was only in the UFC for a year and had three fights.
Right.
You know, he looked great in those, but yeah, the division was so shallow that if you beat a light heavyweight, suddenly you're in title contention very quickly, especially doing it as quickly as he did. So I don't think the book is anywhere near written on him either. This week, guys, this was our poll. I asked on Twitter, at MMA Torch, if you were interested in a Daniel Cormier Stipe Miocic fight. 50% said yes, 38% said no, and 12% said not yet. So I put in the dreaded third option, which tends to skew polls. You know, sometimes you make that binary choice, and at least you have to make a choice. So basically, if you break that down a little further, it's a 50-50 between yes and no, which makes sense. I mean, I think we're all a little fatigued on divisions being held up for super fights. If this is a case, though, where there's no obvious fights to make, it's not like there's a super deserving contender that would get stuck or get stuck in an interim bout. So that's something that should be noted with this. Any other thoughts on that, guys?
I think you pretty much got it.
All right.
Yeah, no, I think that you're 100% right.
All right. You know what? Let's get ready to go to our first break. We're going to be almost on time for a change. But before I do that, I want to talk to you about something. You know, Zach, this is that time of year where everybody's inviting you to stuff. Are you going to get invited to like a Royal Rumble party or a Super Bowl party here in the next couple of weeks?
All of the above. Royal Rumble, NXT takeover party, even, and Super Bowl. So yeah.
And so when you get invited to these things, it's funny, sometimes people ask you to bring wine, and I don't know about you guys, I don't know a ton about wine. I you know which one to bring, and you always want to sound like you're the smartest guy in the room. When people talk about their wine, it's like they're talking about one of their children, where they know every last detail about him, what they're good at and what they're bad at. So that's why I want to talk to you about something called Wink. That's W-I-N-C. Now, what Wink does is it makes it easy to discover what great wine is. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, they ship it right to your door, and it starts at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing quite like coming home to a delicious box of wine that's selected just for you. It's like your best day of the month. I mean, think about that, just getting home after a long, hard day at work, and there it is, a bottle of wine that's just customized just for you. All you have to do is fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask you or translate into a recommendation. You know, that's a guy working behind the counter at the liquor store. He's not going to think of very specific questions to ask you about your wine taste. Questions like, how do you take your coffee, or how do you feel about blueberries? I don't know anybody at a liquor store that's going to ask a question like that. Then, you know, Wink, they send wines that are specifically curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selection gets. Each month, there are delicious new wines, like the insanely popular Summer Water Rose. Now, this is not a type of thing where you have a membership fee. You could skip this thing any month. You can cancel any time. The shipping is covered. If you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. And now, just for our listeners, there's actually a special deal. You can discover great wine today. Go to wink.com/PWTorch. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. Yep, $20. Let me say that again. It's actually trywink.com/PWTorch to get that $20 off. That's trywink.com/PWTorch for $20 off. trywink.com/PWTorch. I know that's something that if I'm going to be going to one of these parties, I want to have a wine that nobody else has. It'll be totally accustomed to what I like and to my taste. With that, guys, let's go to break, and we'll take a call on the other side.
Do you love wrestling? Come see Ring Rust Radio Live. The Ring Rust Radio Royal Rumble live show will take place on January 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time at Lorraine Bar, 1502 Brown Street, Philadelphia, PA 19130. The show will star Donald Wood of Ring Rust Radio, Vaughn Johnson from the Straight Shooters podcast, Joe Archidiacono from the Sal B Plus podcast at Wednesday Wrestling Minutes. Several other surprise appearances will also take place. Tickets are only $5 and available at patreon.com/ringrustradio or on PayPal, ringrustradio@gmail.com. Once again, don't forget, Ring Rust Radio, live in Philadelphia, Sunday, January 28th at Lorraine Bar. And for those who drink, they will have $2 Kenzinger lagers and $3 well drinks. All you need to do before you go to the Rumble. Once again, Sunday, January 28th, Ring Rust Radio, live in Philadelphia.
Absolution. All right, guys, the number to call, of course, as always, 515-605-9345, and press 1 on your keypad to get on the air. Let's go, first of all, it looks like this is Ryan in Maryland. Ryan, how's it going today?
Good. First question I got for you is, went to the local Talk Me contest over the weekend, and I noticed that you have a new rule on headgear that fighters aren't allowed to wear the headgear anymore because it blocks their vision. I don't know if this happens in MMA where they used to wear the headgear in the image for fights or not, but do you agree with this new rule that the headgear is going away so that the fighters can see better and have peripheral vision?
That was the rule in the Tough Man competition?
Yeah, originally, like last year and years prior, they had to wear headgear, but now they're saying it's detrimental to the fighters to wear the headgear because they can't see the punches coming. But there was more knockouts than previous years, I realize.
That's interesting. I've worn headgear in a sparring sense before myself, and there is some vision limiting, and it just feels cumbersome to have the thing on your head. But I would think that versus the actual protection that the helmet provides would be far greater than the vision loss. You're only in theory fighting one person. It's not like you have multiple opponents coming from around you, the side of you, or behind you. What do you think of that, Sean?
Yeah,
Yeah, that sounds more like a something that was lobbied for rather than something that was, a real safety concern to me.
Yeah, Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, my sentiments exactly. It sounds like it's a more of a way to explain a rule change that somebody wanted than it is to actually protect fighters. So I don't see how removing that gear makes anybody safe.
Right, and you see that in amateur boxing all the time, and even Olympic boxing, where they wear the headgear specifically for that, and that's, you know, the highest level of regulation as you can get. And I know a lot of people, when they do training that's not the sparring or the fighting, they do it without a headgear, so when the headgear is on, it does become cumbersome. But I don't think vision restriction, unless the headgear was over the fighter's eyes, would really be an issue. And like I said, because you're fighting somebody head-on, you're not fighting somebody from behind you where your peripheral vision would really be stunted. What else you got for us, Ryan?
And the second question is also on the Tough Man. There was a pro wrestler that fought in the Tough Man and got beat in the second round after the ref stopped the fight. Do you know of any other, like, say, indie pro wrestlers that went out for, say, like MMA or like a Tough Man contest and how they fared in the contest?
I don't know of any current ones off the top of my head. I think back in the day, Bart Gunn, ironically, was big into like Tough Man competitions, and we know he won the Brawl for All, so he was really good at beating non-boxers till he faced Butterbean, and his clock was clean. Zach, can you recall any indie wrestlers that do those type of competitions?
No, that Bart Gunn was the first thing that came to mind in regards to that, and I'm not sure if it. It's just from an indie wrestler's point of view. I mean, your health is everything. I mean, that's how you make money. And if you're not working, you're not getting paid. And I don't know that anybody currently would be out there risking that.
Yeah, Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm in line with Zach here. And there's no one that I've heard of, and I don't think it would make sense for an indie wrestler, especially today, to go into something like that. You know, back in the day when it was, the pro wrestlers really wanted to show that they were tough or wanted the perception to be out that they were tough. Maybe that would have been a thing had Tough Man been around then. But now I don't see that being something that would be that they would prioritize, especially like Zach said, since that would be pretty detrimental to their ability to go out there and have matches.
Well, and then the physical profile of who it seems like competes in those Tough Man contests is totally different than what the current indie wrestler physical profile is. Wrestling, you have the stereotypical cut, lanky, athletic, more acrobatic style, whereas the Tough Man style, I would think a guy like a Braun Strowman would be suited in the Tough Man world more so than an indie wrestler. What else you got for us, Ryan?
And another question I have for you is, have you heard of flash photography being outlawed in MMA, that it distracts the fighters, that the flash can blind the fighter and get sucker punched by the other fighter? Have you ever heard anything like that?
I haven't, but when you watch an MMA broadcast, there's a ton of professional photographers there, and you never see flash going off. Do you guys ever catch any flash going off?
No, I've been to several MMA shows. I've never heard that rule, and never had, I've never used flash, but I don't see it around, see it very much either.
Yeah, and it might just be an unspoken thing on the higher levels. You know, that'd be an interesting question for someone like Esther Lynn, who photographs everything in combat sports. You got anything else, Ryan?
Final question is, there's been like a lot of challenges made. Say, like, I don't know if you ever heard of Alex James. He's always challenging the CNN anchors to fights, and you also see like The Rock trying to challenge like Vin Diesel to like a possibly like a fight of some sort. Do you think if any of these matches ever came about, that the Athletic Commission would try to shut them down before they even got started, or do you think they would like wait till the last minute to shut it down if they were to do a fight like that?
In some of those cases, I actually think they could be sanctioned. If you recall back, this is more of a relic before MMA got going, there were celebrity fights that would air like on Fox. I think Screech actually beat someone up on one of those pretty badly at one point. So there is a history of those things being sanctioned. With that said, that was before something like MMA became so regulated. So now there's such a greater knowledge of what fighting is. And a lot of that was in boxing. I don't know if that would happen so readily in the present, but I wouldn't dismiss it outright. And it's one thing with fighting. You don't have to fight in Vegas or you don't have to fight in New York. You could find a place to fight somewhere within the continental United States where you have a very loose athletic commission and make some money that way. What do you think of that, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right on all accounts, and I also think it's a total case by case basis. I think it depends on who's fighting who. It depends on how much, you know, how much money could be generated with it. I think all those factors play into whether or not, you know, they would sanction something, and it's just hard to answer in a vacuum like that, but I think it certainly could get sanctioned, different things of that nature, but it just depends on who's involved.
Sean, what do you think about sanctioning celebrity fights?
Yeah, I think if an athletic commission thinks there's money to be made, they'll call an exhibition and take care of it. I don't think it'd be an issue.
Yep. Yeah, and to be honest with you, there's a lot of fights that happen within, you know, quote-unquote legitimate MMA that should probably never be sanctioned when you look at the experience level of some guys. And sometimes it goes to the extreme of what happened in Edmonton with Tim Heck. So hopefully things don't get that far. But yeah, I think athletic commissions, when you look at the many arms of government, if one could be swayed so easily and publicly, athletic commission sanctioning fights is definitely an area that there seems to be very little resistance. Ryan, call us again next week, man.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
All right, Ryan drops off. That leaves the line open for you at 515-605-9345. All right, guys, we also had it was a pretty big night of MMA on Saturday. You had Bellator and the UFC running head-to-head, and Bellator put on a pretty good card on paper and a fairly entertaining card to watch. We had Aaron Pico taking out Shane Crutchin with an amazing body punch. You don't ever see a body punch that often that has that kind of devastation. Sean, can you put that body punch into context with others?
Oh, man. I mean, if you look at Scott Smith and Pete Sell, that was a nasty body shot, although Scott Smith got the knockout right after that. There's been so many on the spot that it's hard to come up with them. That's probably the first one that comes to mind. But I mean, Pico, that was it was nasty. He crumpled him you got a good body shot when it's evident immediately that the fight is over from it. And that was pretty much what that one was.
Yeah, it wasn't the case where the body shot led to a follow-up or something greater. No, it was the body shot that took him out.
Yeah.
Zach, is Aaron Pico, is he starting to put up the highlight reel that Bellator wanted him to put up? Are they on track with him?
I think they are on track with him, yeah. And I think he's certainly helped his and their case with that knockout. It was incredible and devastating, all wrapped up into one. And I do think they're on the right track. I think they view him, and he's positioned himself as a guy who's going to do some big things within that company. And given the right framework, I think, and his success, I think he could be something. So I think bigger things are still to come with him this year.
Right, and some may be critical about his opponents, but you got to remember, just because he's in Bellator, which is, you know, the number two organization in the world, it's only his third fight ever in MMA. So he's getting the type of opponents that he would get on the local scene. He's just getting them on national TV, which is a fairly smart gamble on their part. And you could say maybe he's taking the boxing route where he beats a bunch of no-names before he gets his big shot, but I think everything's going just as well for him. Now, in the co-main event, Rory McDonald took the welterweight title from Douglas Lima. And if you see Rory McDonald's face after the fight, you would never guess in a million years he was the winner. Or his leg, for that matter. This was an absolutely brutal, brutal bout. Sean, what do you think of the fight, and how tough are these guys?
Oh, man. It was a good fight. And McDonald, I tell you, there's some guys that just – look like they've been through the ringer no matter what. And McDonald is one of those guys. I mean, he starts getting dinged up and he just looks like he's been run over by a steamroller. And, you know, win or lose, he's just going to look like that. That's just how it's going to go. And GSP is kind of like that, too, to some extent. But, I mean, really impressive showing by McDonald. And Lima, it continues to be tough as nails. I mean, what he did to McDonald's leg is just terrible. It was a terrible thing. And but yeah, really, really impressive by them. And you know, I'm excited to see what McDonald does now. Is he gonna continue to look for two titles or three titles or whatever he was talking about doing, or is he gonna stay at welterweight for a little while? It'll be interesting to see what Bellator decides to do with him.
Yeah, Zach, you DM'd me. You didn't watch the fight live, but and I was watching it on Saturday night. Like, hey, it looked like it was a really good fight. I was like, no, it wasn't necessarily a good fight. It was just a brutal fight. And as good as the fight, as brutal as the fight was, it still didn't do justice to how Rory looked at the end of it. Like, it looked like he was even in a much tougher fight than what we had. Zach, is Rory the best welterweight in the world right now?
Oh gosh, that is a really tough question to answer. At this minute, probably not, because I'm not sure he can stand. But man, he certainly made a case for it. I watched it back, and yeah, it was one of those fights when I was on Twitter for MMA Torch, just taking that over during the UFC 220 card, and all I was seeing as I'm, you know, tweeting was stuff about this fight, how like, you know, oh my God, Rory's leg and this and that. And so that's what prompted me to DM you and be like, what is going on over there? Cause I wasn't watching it live, but it, such a brutal, brutal fight. You were 100% right on that. I was impressed by both guys, you know, for Lima to do that to Rory's leg is something else. I mean, it's just incredible. And then for Rory to withstand that and continue to fight on that leg with the amount of damage that he took really just puts into perspective how tough that guy is. And I don't know if he's the best welterweight in the world. I think there's some guys in the UFC that certainly have made their claim to that. But man, he's probably the toughest. And even if I am a top UFC guy in that division, I would be worried about facing that guy because it seems like you'd have to actually kill him to put him down.
Yeah, like Robbie Lawler did.
Right. It's incredible. So I think he's a really talented fighter. For me, just to not sidestep the question, I'll say no, he's not the best welterweight in the world just because he's not in the company with the most competition right now. But that's kind of a cop-out answer, and I know it, but that's what I was going with, just to give you a straight answer.
Yeah, and it's a loaded question. There's no real way to answer it, and it probably isn't, but you could actually say that the title is somewhat disputed. You could truly say that there's a case for two champions, not like what we're going to talk about here in a little bit with that badness. But no, there's a legitimate argument for that. I think the other end of this spectrum would be in the main event where Chael Sonnen gets the decision over Quentin Rampage Jackson in a pretty ho-hum fight. Rampage looked huge. Chael, by comparison, looked tiny. But it was the typical Chael affair where he kind of laid on him a while and did what he needed to do. Already, our bracket from last week is busted. We had Rampage moving on, and he is not moving on. There's not much to break down in the fight, but I want to ask you guys, I'll start with you, Zach. What did you think of the overall presentation of the heavyweight Grand Prix in Bellator? They really pushed that heavy on this night.
I actually thought it was pretty good. I don't think the fight lived up to it, but that happens sometimes. But I think as a company and as a presentation, they really made it feel like a big deal, you know, and they capitalized that throughout the night. And they kept, you know, driving that point home and backing it up with, hey, this is going to be a big thing for the year. You're going to want to pay attention to this and so on and so forth. So I bought that. I thought it was a good move by them to present it that way. I think if they can get one or two fights here in the first round of this thing to be something, I think that'll set up the rest of the tournament really nicely. But they've got to get some of these fights to actually come through and be entertaining and be good, so that it pushes further intrigue and engagement into the next rounds. But I thought on the surface, just from a promotional standpoint, the way they presented everything, I bought it. I thought it was good.
You can never accuse Bellator of going halfway with anything. Anytime they do something, they are completely 100% all in. So I got a little fatigued throughout the night of them plugging it so much. It is because, like any television MMA broadcast, there's a ton of stalling. And there was in this broadcast, you know, they had to interview Ryan Bader, and they had to do this and do that, and a lot of stuff with this tournament. But they are definitely all in on it. They did announce today, Saturday, April 28th, we'll get Fedor versus Mir, which is a fun fight. And like even last week when we were making out our bracket, when you realize that as long as all these fighters stay in, there's going to be some fun little matchups that you never would have really saw before. So as long as it all holds up, this will be a fun little thing. Sean, what'd you think of the overall presentation of the heavyweight Grand Prix?
Yeah, I think they did a good job with it. Bellator generally does a pretty good job with their presentation, and this was no exception here. And I think that's going to be key going forward, is what you guys were talking about, is fun fights, because we're not exactly talking about relevant fights here. We're not talking about, at the end of this tournament, oh boy, maybe Ryan Bader is the best heavyweight in the world. No one's going to be saying that, right? So what you need is you got to make this fun, and presentation is a big part of that, and I think Bellator excels at that. So as the tournament goes on, I expect some fun weirdness and general fun fights. So it should be interesting going forward.
All right, guys. This week we're not getting a call from Valentin from Russia, which really bums me out. It's one of the highlights of the show every week is getting our call from Valentin. But that doesn't mean he does not have a presence on the show this week, because he sent us an email to MMALivecast@gmail.com. Been a pretty lonely inbox, but Valentin lit it up just like he did the phone lines a couple weeks ago. So let's read what he had to say. Hi, guys. It's Valentin from Russia. Have to leave earlier than usual today, so I wouldn't be able to call. My question for today is, what do you think about recent Chael Sonnen promos? Is he too pro-wrestling and too repetitive? I appreciate you answering my question. Sean, what's your response to Valentin?
I wouldn't say it's too pro-wrestling. I would say that Chael Sonnen is not relevant enough to make it interesting. That's what the problem is at this point. You know, back when he was fighting Anderson Silva and he was getting title shots and things like that, you know, those promos, while ridiculous, were at least, you know, leading to something. Now, pretty much anything that Chael Sonnen says is empty words, so I don't pay a lot of attention to it. That's kind of the thing. As for whether promos can be generally too pro-wrestling, I don't know that they can. I mean, a promo is a promo, and that's, you know, pro-wrestling is kind of where that comes from. So I don't think you can get too pro wrestling with a promo, unless you're, you know, doing an affected voice or something like that. So, I'm fine with the content. But I just think that the relevance of the fighter also has to be there in order to make it, something.
Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I have no problem with the fact that he's attempting to give a promo and sell his fight. I think that's necessary. And I think in his past, he's been effective at doing that. It's just that now he's got absolutely no credibility with what he says. I mean, so he's just a guy out there saying stuff and either A, not backing it up, or B, it being so off the wall that nobody can take it seriously. So I don't think he has a problem in terms of what he's doing. It's fact that he just has nothing behind it, like Sean said.
Well, and as part of a promo, the whole root of the word is to promote, and Chael, not on pay-per-view, doesn't have a ton to promote, so he may be slightly uninspired in his role now versus when you're fighting John Jones and you're fighting Anderson Silva. I've actually gone full circle with my appreciation for Chael's promos. Around, say, the beginning, this time last year, 2017, and Chael first got into Bellator, I thought his shtick with Tito Ortiz was the lamest stuff ever. Because I think we just came off of a year of these crazy Conor McGregor promos. But then McGregor goes to fight Mayweather and basically jumps the shark with his promos. And I've started to appreciate Sonnen's race-baiting promos so much more than I did than I did in the past. I don't think you could be too pro wrestling. The whole idea of a promo comes from pro wrestling. Even if you look at Muhammad Ali, who's probably the greatest promo ever in combat sports, he took his style from Gorgeous George. So it's always going to be a pro wrestling thing. And there's something really funny about Sonnen's promos now where he just makes completely false claims. It's kind of like, almost like a Sean Spicer type of thing where you know what he's saying has no bearing of truth and there's clear evidence right in front of you that it's not the case, but he's going to say it anywhere. I loved at the end of the Bellator pay-per-view when he claimed that he tapped Tito Ortiz out earlier in the year. I thought that was just classic. Like, of course, like we talk about the delusional heel in pro wrestling who has to believe whatever BS he's putting out there. I mean, nobody does that better than Chael. All right, guys. As always, Valentin, have a great day at work. We'll say that to you even if you're not listening live today. But we're going to go to a break, and then when we come back, we'll dive into the latest in the Conor McGregor madness.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, guys, back with you. MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans. Be sure if you have a question, email us, MMA Livecast. It's MMALIVECAST at gmail.com, or you can give us a call right now, 515-605-9345. Just press 1 on your keypad. Let me know you do want to come on the air. All right, guys. This is our weekly segment updating what's going on in Conor McGregor's world. This past week, we had the announcement. Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov for the undisputed lightweight title of the UFC. However, Dana White has refused.
I heard air quotes in that.
Yeah, you saw it with my hand. Because apparently McGregor, according to Dana White, has not been stripped of his previously undisputed non-interim title. So does that mean we have three titles floating around now? Do we have two? Nobody really knows. Sean, what do you make of all this madness?
What it says to me is that Dana White doesn't want to strip Conor McGregor, or doesn't want to be obvious about stripping Conor McGregor, but that he's kind of winking at us. Like, you guys know he's really stripped, right? Because he may or may not come back, and Dana White knows that, and he's just kind of saying, I mean, we're not going to say he's stripped, but, you know, wink, wink, you guys know he is, you know? And it's kind of like, it's similar to how John Jones's specter kind of hung over the light heavyweight division for a little while when he was kind of figuring out his issues, but different in that we don't know if McGregor is going to come back or if he's just going to sit back and talk trash. So it's a strange situation.
Zach, where are you on the non-stripped Conor McGregor?
I really think that Dana White did himself and the whole situation a disservice by not giving like a definitive answer to what the fight between Ferguson and Khabib was going to be. I mean, if you're going to keep the undisputed title on McGregor, and he essentially did that because he didn't strip him of the belt, I just don't see why you don't use that to your advantage. I mean, own it. Like, okay, we get it. You don't want to strip Conor McGregor of his title. He's the biggest draw that you have as a company. You're not sure whether he's going to retire yet. So just leave it up. I mean, the fact that you say that the fight between Ferguson and Khabib is going to be for the undisputed title, everyone knows that it's not the case truly, even if it is wink-wink, because you haven't stripped Conor McGregor of it. And I think if you're going to keep him as champion, admit it. Just admit that you need him as champ. Admit that you want him as your champion until his future is decided. And then go forward. There's nothing wrong with that fight being for the interim championship. And then people can talk about, okay, whoever wins that, maybe they'll get a shot at McGregor next. And I think at that point, it's the division still has structure. Now, by UFC's own doing, the structure in the division is gone. And that's what I don't like about it. I just think if you're going to make that decision about Conor, you don't want to strip him, fine. We get it. He's an anomaly. He's the biggest star you ever had. Yeah, fine. Just keep him, keep the belt on him and move on. I just don't get why you would add another layer of confusion to an already really confusing saga by the non-strip strip. It's mind-numbing to me.
Yeah, and it's like he just literally doesn't want to say the words to not offend Conor McGregor is what it sounds like. I mean, and I don't think Conor would really, if Conor got stripped, Conor's still claiming he's the two division champ in the featherweight division, so I don't think it would be any skin off Conor's back. The monetary value of holding the championship isn't the same thing to McGregor as it is to another championship, because he's going to get paid regardless. But it does seem like one of those things, you know, when you let your son, you know, win the ball game or pretend like they caught the fish, like, yay, and then now let's get back to what we're really doing. That's exactly what this whole thing reeks of. And you talked about reinstating the division. I think this is Dana's attempt to reinstate the division. Barbosa,
yeah, I agree.
Ferguson fight really is the reason why he's saying undisputed, like, okay, this is where we're going, this is who we got. We got Alvarez, we got Gaethje, we got all these guys here. This is the real division. McGregor's just off in an island with his honorary title. That it was maybe a passive aggressive way of taking shots at McGregor, but that's what he did. And to save him some headway, couldn't he have just said, well, McGregor technically wasn't inactive because he competed in a sanctioned event for us, so we're keeping the title. Like, he doesn't have to. He's trying to play both sides of the Dana White persona. On one end, he's trying to be the Dana White that says, you know, you fight the top contenders and this is the UFC. This isn't boxing. You take on who we put in front of you and our champions are active. He's trying to still hold on to that while being this new era of the UFC where it's like, you know, we promote what we promote to whatever's going to make the biggest money. And it's weird that he's on both sides of the fence with this, where I think subtly he is still trying to be that guy that he used to be. But he knows that he just cannot cut the cord from McGregor. You think about it like from a WWE perspective, how they will never say anything mean about The Rock or anything disparaging about The Rock on any of their programming. Or if you're related to The Rock in any way, you are golden. And it's because they don't want to ever sever that relationship. And I feel that we have a very similar situation here with McGregor and the UFC. Guys, let's go to another break, and then on the other side, we'll play Fact or Fiction with a few more of Dana White's recent comments.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, back with you. We just talked about Dana White's comments. We'll analyze a few more in Fact or Fiction. We took a week off of Fact or Fiction last week, so hopefully everybody remembers how to play it. They got their instructions out. Not that hard of a game, guys. All right, the first question will be for Fact or Fiction. Dana White's prediction that Jon Jones, Brock Lesnar, Conor McGregor, and the Diaz brothers will return in 2018 will come true. Fact or Fiction, Sean?
Fiction. I don't know if any of them will fight in 2018. But I definitely don't see all of them. I don't see how that would even be possible. Lesnar, for one, I don't think is coming back at all. And, yeah, McGregor, I don't know that he'll ever come back. I don't see it. It seems like one of those things that he just said, one of those word vomit quotes from Dana.
Zach, is this whole lovely bunch going to come back to MMA in 2018?
Gosh, you know what? If it does happen, man, we'll be in for one exciting year on this show. But I'm going to go with fiction also. It's just, I mean, you're talking about all of those guys who haven't fought in the UFC in a very, very long time, and to realistically believe that they would all come back and have fights in the same year is just, to me, it's beyond ridiculous, actually. So fiction all the way, but hey, here's to hoping.
I wouldn't say fiction all the way, but probably fiction. It's interesting, though, because with those four entities, there's a direct connection between a couple of them. Because why are we going to see Nate Diaz this year? Well, because he'd be coming back to fight Conor McGregor. So that knocked those two out. And if we were to see Brock Lesnar come back, what was the fight we were talking about a few months ago? Him against Jon Jones. So maybe it's a super card with those two fights. I don't see it happening. I don't see Jon Jones coming back at all. I'm not at all, period, not at all in the year for sure. Brock, I do think he's going back to MMA, but it'd be the very tail end of 2018 if that were to happen. So I don't think so. McGregor, plausibly. I don't know. You know, we go back and forth. We've predicted this a bunch of times. We don't know yet. It doesn't seem like it. And the Diaz brothers, I think, is totally contingent on Brock. On McGregor coming back. All right. Well, another topic of crossover between pro wrestling and MMA that got brought up over the weekend is Dana White saying that he's going to give CM Punk another chance in the UFC. Now, we've all predicted that CM Punk will fail in whatever fight he takes in the UFC, so it's not really worth discussing that because I think we're in agreement on how that will go. However, now that he's already had a UFC stint and he drew pretty well in that first time, the question is, CM Punk will draw well in his new UFC opportunity. Fact or fiction, Zach?
Oh, man. I'm going to say, from a pay-per-view standpoint, I'm going to say fiction. I don't think he would draw well just because the novelty of him fighting is worn off because everybody saw him fight, and it was – I think if there was a way for it to be worse than you thought it would be, it was. And so I don't think there's really a market out there for people wanting to hand over – $70 to watch that again. That said, I think he may be able to draw in a different way in the means of, you know, a rating point somewhere. You put him on TV for, you know, fight night or on a Fox card, he may be able to pull in a number there for people that don't have to shell up extra dough and that just want to get their CM Punk fix. So I don't think he'll draw. I'm going fishing for my answer, but I think a test could be to put him on TV and see how he does that.
Sean, does CM Punk draw in his next UFC opportunity?
Yeah, I think Zach is 100% right here. I think there's zero chance that he would draw as pay-per-view. The bloom is off a rose there. But on free television, I think it'll be a lot easier to convince people to just tune in for what could be, you know, 10 or 15 seconds of a CM Punk fight and see what happens. So, but yeah, I definitely don't see him being any kind of pay-per-view draw at all for the UFC.
No, and nobody draws on pay-per-view anymore. So why would CM Punk be suddenly the exception of some?
There's
yeah,
also that
just wouldn't make sense. I thought from the beginning they should have put him on TV. I think he would have been a great television draw. I do hope the promotion's a little bit different of him. It seems like they did do the reality series, but this wasn't the CM Punk that we've all come to know. And maybe he's a little more humbled being in an arena where he is such a novice at. But if you're going to have CM Punk, I want to see CM Punk. I want to see the bitter old man CM Punk that everybody, you know, is drawn to. And that's something that they just did not take advantage of. I really wish he was in Bellator because I just think Bellator would do so much a better job with CM Punk. But hey, you can't turn down that UFC money for it on a 0-0 record.
You're right.
Not blame him at all. All right. Now, speaking of someone who's had moderate success in both WWE and the UFC, should the WWE have brought back Ken Shamrock for Raw 25, Sean?
Yeah, I don't know why not. I mean, they're bringing back all these Attitude Era guys. It seems to be the kind of their nostalgia of the of this era is the Attitude Era, and Ken Shamrock was a pretty decent sized part of that. So I could see them bringing him back for sure.
Zach, should they have brought back Shamrock for tonight?
Yeah, I'll say fact on that. I think, you know, there's been no true rhyme or reason to who they've decided to bring back. It seems to me it's like they tried to get as many old legends as they could, and if it worked, then they brought him in. And I mean, in that regard, he certainly has his place, especially over some other guys that are advertised for the show tonight. And like Sean said, he was a big part of a lot of Attitude Era angles on Monday Night Raw. So to me, if you could have got him, definitely. Maybe it was just something as simple as scheduling. But you know what? He certainly deserves his place there if he wanted it.
Yeah, the criteria for tonight seemed to be that you're on speaking terms with the company, you're not under investigation for anything, and you don't have any racist tapes of you in the past. Those are like the three criteria for being brought back to Raw 25. The Shamrock's weird. I've heard some interviews in the past where back in the day he had a lot of cross words with Triple H. So that might be part of it. You know, he's on the wrong side of the guy that would actually be in charge of bringing him back. And he said in the past he's not sure why he's never been called for anything like within the last 10 years, which is interesting because in some respects he is a crossover star and a crossover athlete, albeit from a different era. And they like to glom onto anything from any other parts of entertainment. It is kind of amazing how far he's been separated from them for so long. One more. Raw 25 does get underway here in a couple of minutes, so if you're listening to this on demand, this will be a bit of a time capsule. You'll probably know what the answer is. But, Zach, The Undertaker will tease a match tonight on Raw 25.
Yes, I'm going to say fact to that. I think, you're getting Undertaker back in a big way on a big Raw. I don't think you have him there in the capacity that he's going to be featured without a good reason. And I think at this point, the only really big reason and drawing reason for him to be back is to promote some kind of match. I think the match is going to be at WrestleMania. I'm of the thought that something's going to go down between him and John Cena, and they plant the seeds for that match at WrestleMania.
I'm with you. I just think all those signs are just too obvious for them to ignore. And even though I'm not a fan of him wrestling again, if you can make that Cena Undertaker match, you have one last chance. You've had the opportunity to do it for the last 5 years. You can do it. Go ahead and do it. Sean, you think Taker teases something tonight?
100%. I think you guys hit it on the head. You know, I think he teases it. I think it's with John Cena. I don't know that I believe that it will actually happen, but I think they definitely tease it just in case.
All right, guys, let's go to our last break, and we'll talk some Royal Rumble coming up this weekend.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Now, guys, before we run wild with our Royal Rumble predictions, I actually missed a part of the agenda, and we did not preview this weekend's main event in the UFC on UFC on Fox with, quite frankly, a very underwhelming Fox card compared to what they normally are, but a pretty decent main event. You have Jacare Souza taking on Derek Brunson. Sean, who do you got in that fight?
Oh, man, I've barely even thought about this fight because it hasn't seemed it's been like one of those fights that kind of flies under the radar until it's right on top of you. But having said that, I think it's going to be Jacare that gets the win here. I think he will be too much for Derek Brunson, even though I do like Wesley Edebrunson.
Yeah, Jacare was on a complete tear till he ran up against Whitaker, and he was really looking like the true guy to break out of that middleweight pack. And I think he still can. What do you think, Zach? Who takes this on Saturday night?
It's like Sean climbed into my brain and pulled out my thoughts on this one. I'm going Jacare as well. Same thing. I've been pretty impressed with what Brunson has done, but my feeling on this is that Jacare on the surface is just a better fighter, and that's going to come out on Saturday.
Yeah, in the landscape of people who watch both pro wrestling and MMA, this weekend you've got the NXT TakeOver, you've got the Royal Rumble. Poor Jacare and Brunson are going to get so far lost in that shuffle. Hopefully I remember to cover it next week, even though it's right here on my agenda. Hopefully I don't just push right past it. So keep me honest, guys. MMALivecast@gmail.com. All right, guys. With that, let's talk about the Royal Rumble. It's coming up this weekend. I guess it's going to be like a 40-hour-long show because there's about a million matches, including two Royal Rumbles. Before we talk about the Royal Rumbles, let's break down. We have 2 3-man title matches too, so there's all kinds of madness going in with these in the SmackDown for the world title. You got the handicap match with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn taking on AJ Styles. Zach, who do you got in this one?
I am taking AJ Styles. I think he's the guy on the show. I mean, he's the guy the company is pushing right now. He's at the New York Stock Exchange today with the title. It's clear that they are behind him, and so I think he's going to be the guy to win. I think he's the guy they want to be carrying that belt when they go into WrestleMania so that he can have a marquee match. And for that to happen, he needs to have a relatively long reign, and they can't hotshot the belt so soon after him winning it. On top of that, I can't. You know, just to respect myself in the morning, I cannot predict a scenario in which we'd have co-WWE champions. I can't do it, so I'm going AJ Styles.
Dana White would totally book co-Undisputed Champions in this situation. Sean, who you got in this match?
Yeah, I've got AJ. Kind of like the last question, I think Zach climbed into my head and pulled out my thoughts. That's pretty much what I'm thinking. You know, the only wild card here, as you can pretty much say that it's kind of a caveat with any prediction you do with WWE, is Vince McMahon. You know, is he going to get, you know, a wild hair and say, geez, this co-champion thing could be really entertaining. You know, and if he does, then we're all in for something interesting. But I don't think it'll happen. I think they'll stick with AJ, and I think they should.
It was hilarious back in 2006 when Mick Foley declared him and Edge as the co-hardcore champions of the world. And if anybody can pull off co-champions, it would be Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. But I don't think it happens. I think this is going to be another SmackDown main event that's really just Sami and Kevin and how they interact and Brian and Shane coming and all of that madness that's been going through SmackDown lately. It's going to be more of that. In the Raw title match, the Universal title, we have Brock Lesnar defending against Braun Strowman and Kane. Are we all in agreement that Brock rolls here?
Yes,
sir.
Okay, yeah, I didn't think there'd be much discussion on that one. It should be actually a pretty decent match. I'm kind of looking forward to that one. Okay, guys, we got two.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Strowman spot.
Yeah, I wonder, like, what's he going to do? Like send the arena into the Earth's orbit? Or, like, how can they top after he turn over semis and stuff? Like, what's next for Braun? I don't know. Like, that's, I think, the problem.
Maybe he'll flip the ring.
He'll do what?
Right.
Flip the ring. That's what I'm calling.
That'd be great, especially being that you'll need another match after where they're going over the ring. That'd be really great if Braun picks it up. maybe during the Royal Rumble, he comes out and lifts up the ring while everyone's inside of it going back and forth, and then just slams it down. All right, guys, we have the first ever.
You heard it here
first,
folks.
Mark it down. Take it to Vegas. You got the first ever Women's Royal Rumble. Kind of hard to pick out of this one. It seems to be about 15 or so competitors announced, which is basically the rosters of Raw and SmackDown, respectively. Before we pick a winner, I'll ask you, Sean, do we see Ronda Rousey here?
Jeez. Yeah, probably. I think so. Yeah. I don't know that she'll win. You know what, though? If we do see her, I don't know why she wouldn't win. You know, whether it's by fluke or whatever. If you're going to have Ronda Rousey out here, she probably ought to win.
Zach, we get Ronda on Sunday?
Yeah, I think we do. And like Sean said, because if she's going to be in it, she's got to win. I mean, you know, they're going to present her as a, you know, badass, as they should. And she can't go in there unless – and the only scenario I can see her not winning is, you know, being eliminated by – her eventual opponent at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
That's the only way I see her not winning, and her loss being a means to set up the program that she'll be in. But outside of that, I think people are going to pop for her appearance. I think this is a moment where, hey, it's her first time out there. She's got to look big. She's got to look like convincing. And I think you do that by having her win this match. It just gives her instant credibility in the WWE landscape.
I'm going to say we see her on Sunday, but I mean, we literally see her. I don't think she competes in this match. And because I just don't think you're going to have Ronda Rousey's okay. first wrestling match unannounced. I think you really would want to build for that. I could definitely see a scenario, though, where, you know, whoever the last woman standing is standing there at the ring, and all of a sudden, you know, the lights focus on the entrance wrap, and there's Ronda Rousey. I think something like that definitely could happen. I think they'd probably want to announce. WWE's not big on surprises anymore. I mean, look at what they got tonight. Unless there's somebody else they're going to dig out of the grave to put on Raw 25, they are announcing everything possible to lead in beforehand. It's, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. So then I'm going to pick Asuka, which is the only one that makes sense if it's not going to be Rousey, but definitely interested in that match. See who they pull out. You know, who from the Mae Young Classic or what a legendary performer comes in that one. That's definitely something to watch. And of course, guys, we got the Men's Royal Rumble, which seems to be very difficult to handicap this year because there's not like one person that they put on that quest like they normally do, where you know it's going to be it. The Royal Rumble is the thing that wrestling fans look forward to the most and hate even more after the fact. I can't think of a thing that everyone gets so excited for every year, but then has their hopes dashed at the end of it, really for the last 5 or 6 years. WrestleMania, there's tempered expectations at times. There's times people know, yeah, this Mania is not going to be pretty good. I'm going to watch. Then maybe you come out of it happier, or you have your expectations up and it goes low. The expectations are always super high for the Royal Rumble match and just hasn't been met recently. Zach, who wins it this year?
I think that the WWE are finally gonna give the fans what they want on Royal Rumble night to avoid reactions that they've had the past few years. And I think they're going to do that by giving the win to Shinsuke Nakamura. I don't think it's a, you know, crazy outside of the box pick, but he seems to be the guy that makes the most sense on a lot of different levels. For one, they've got the AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura match that seemingly they want to go to at some point. Neither one of those guys have much going on after the Royal Rumble, and I think they've planted seeds throughout last year that the match would happen, and it's been met with positive reactions. And I think this is a really, really easy way to get there in a babyface versus babyface way. At the same time, because Shinsuke Nakamura can win this, I think they avoid any sort of backlash with Roman Reigns, because obviously he's on a path to potentially and probably face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. I cannot see, unless the WWE just wants to troll Philly the week before the Super Bowl, I just can't see them rehashing that again. I mean, they know what the reaction is going to be. They've worked so hard to get Roman Reigns to a place where he's, you know, at least somewhat feared by the audience. He's connected with the Shield. I think they undo a lot of that if they have him win the Royal Rumble. And so I think they go with Shinsuke to avoid any backlash there. He's the guy that makes the most sense. And I think that's the trigger that they pull on Sunday.
Sean, who walks out of Philly as the Royal Rumble winner?
Yeah, we agree again, man. I think it's Shinsuke Nakamura. I think that's probably the right call. Here's the thing. You can predict it's going to be someone from SmackDown because, like Zach said, you know, Roman Reigns is going to WrestleMania and is going to beat Brock Lesnar, and that's just how it's going to be. I also believe that, you know, obviously I think Nakamura, you know, that being said, makes the most sense coming from SmackDown. And I also believe that the biggest pop of the night, and write this down, is going to be when Roman Reigns gets eliminated from the Royal Rumble.
Yep.
But I love you.
I don't think we're going on too much.
I love when they use him like they did last year as the complete troll move at number 30, just so Orton could get cheered whenever he threw him over. I love that now that they're completely self-aware with him. That's awesome. And I would put him in. I don't know what happens. Maybe he'll have an intercontinental match that happens. He's got one tonight. But I'm definitely a fan of him being in that Rumble in Philly and having one of those spots where he cleans house and just hangs out on the ropes. You know, he can do those smug things so well, and that'll be a heck of a moment. Having Roman win just to troll the Philly fans before the Super Bowl would be an all-time move, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think Nakamura wins just because it doesn't make sense for anyone else to win. I know there's been a lot of buzz about Cena winning, but I just don't think they're putting the belt on Cena at Mania because he's so part-time at this point. And then Raw has the elimination pay-per-view in – which basically from here on out, you could predict what brand is going to have the winning superstar based on what the other one has the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, which is basically will serve as your pseudo mini Royal Rumble at the next month. All right, guys, we've come to the end of our show today, and I think we all made it through okay. We had a ton of stuff to talk about, and it was a really fun show. Sean, this week we don't need an Eagles preview, but would you like to do any gloating during the plug segment?
You know what? Now that you bring it up, I'm not going to gloat here, but I've got a little bit of a beef, all right? I'll keep this as brief as possible. So I watched the game last night at my parents' house with my brother, and I came home, midway through the fourth quarter, so I could watch the celebration afterwards and whatnot. And I get on Twitter, and this is probably my first mistake, but I get on Twitter, and I'm about to write something to Wade and Jamie, my Vikings friends, as a gesture of goodwill, because I got no beef with Vikings fans, right? We're both hard luck franchises. That's how it goes, you know. We're in this together. But I see on there this narrative that Vikings fans are going to be rooting for the Pats because the Eagles fans are terrible. So I let me throw this out there, right? So the Vikings fans come into Philly. I got no problem with this, by the way. They come into Philly. They stand in front of the Art Museum steps, you know, where the Rocky statue is. They put Rocky in purple, put him in Vikings gear, all that stuff, and do the skull chant. All right, that's fine. Whatever. Fair play. It's all good. Then everybody gets upset when they go to the stadium and the game is effectively over and the Eagles fans start doing Foles chants, right, to spook the skull chant. Well, hey, that's fair play too. And then, you know, I see a lot of things about the bad behavior by the Philly fans and whatnot. And I've been a Philly fan all my life. I know how it goes. It's the reputation. I mean, I'm not going to go into all that stuff because it's a lazy narrative to me. You know, you go to any stadium in the country, probably in the world, and you see a similar percentage of people doing stupid things. But here's the thing, right? All of this is just to say, you Vikings fans, you want to root for the Patriots in 2 weeks, you go ahead. You know, I've got friends who are Vikings fans, and it's like I told them, I'm ecstatic for my guys, and I hate when a hard luck fan base has to lose, right? It's just from one titleless team to another. But for all you suckers who want to root for Darth Vaders, your tears are delicious to me, and I look forward to tasting them again in 2 weeks. Darth Vader dies in the end. Go Birds.
Next week, Sean will be conducting promo class with everybody on the MMA roster to make sure they can sell something as good as Sean just sold the Super Bowl in that one. Wow, yeah, it seems like there's some deep-seated things going on there, Sean. You could tell how it really builds up in Philly fans. They have to get it out. You know, I was going to say something to you about booing Santa, but I don't know what your wrath will incur on me for saying such a thing, so I'm going to stay completely away from that. If they want more of that, Sean, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at Sean Ennis, S-H-A-W-N-E-N-N-I-S. I tweet about Philly sports, wrestling, and MMA, so come and find me if you want.
Zach, what you got going on your Artistry of Wrestling column this week?
Yeah, man, gosh, I don't know how I'm gonna live up to Sean's plug segment here, but yes, I have a Artistry of Wrestling column now on the Torch, just diving into a new take on analyzing current events in pro wrestling instead of looking at booking and storylines, just looking at the actual art of the in-ring product. So the most recent article, our column up there right now, is kind of an analysis of the Nia Jax match against Asuka last week on Raw. Just kind of talking through the psychology of it, and we'll have one this week as well. Have to get through Raw and SmackDown first, but yeah, that's each week at the ProWrestlingTorch.com, and then also have my regular MMA Torch piece column, just a take on a current event, as well at MMATorch.com. You can find all that stuff, and I appreciate everyone reading, at Z Hedorn on Twitter, at Z-H-E-Y-D-O-R-N. And since we're talking, you know, trash about sports, I'm just going to lay in a go Bears question mark. That's it.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter at Rob M. Viejos, RobmVallejos. I have even more ridiculous takes about the Miami Dolphins on that Twitter account for the two of you listening that would care about that. But you could also follow the brand at MMA Torch, that's at MMATORCH, where I guarantee you there will be no irrelevant football takes whatsoever. You also go to MMATorch.com, PW Torch VIP, PW Podcast, PW Torch Livecast. For Zach and Sean, I am Robert. We'll see you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.